Hello.
Hello. Hello, hello. I joined the wrong room that
Oh,
I
no.
yeah, so I got a, we got a special food safety talk room. And I joined my personal. You ever just go into your personal what's it called? Personal room, personal meeting room?
I use my personal room all the time.
I'm always using my personal room, but it sometimes puts me in there and I'm like, I got a message that you had already joined my room, but you're not here. You're not in the room. So yeah.
When you get an email notification when I joined this
Yes,
call, right?
correct, correct.
Is there a link that you click
Oh, I'm
in
sure
that
there
email?
is.
Or, oh, but you don't do it.
I didn't do that. I went
Okay.
I sat down. I was at a nice meeting for an interview candidate for a job here. And then I left that, came directly to my office, saw my phone that you had joined, then sat down at my computer, fired up the Zoom box, and I just clicked on the thing that the Zoom app says. I didn't go to my calendar or the email. Yeah, no, it's all my fault. I mean, I'm yeah, no, no, yeah, it's not you, it's me, Don. Which of course,
Hey,
yeah,
so
but
can we do a little bit of department head chair talk?
we can, you know what, we could do all this whole episode could be department head chair talk if you wanted.
People love when they tune into the food safety podcast and they don't hear about food safety. But just very quickly, I'm a little bit drunk with power because right before this call, I was in the app for our faculty compensation program. And this is my first
Ooh.
time doing this. Our peer evaluation committee met. They provided me with some information. But then I've got to take that information and then recommend raises for faculty as well as raises for the evaluation committee. That's what I've been doing. I've been giving away the university's money to my faculty. And it made me wonder, and these are not what you call standard raises. These are what we used to call merit
Yeah,
raises. So
yeah.
based, again, part of our wonderful union, which negotiated good contract for us. We've got merit pit raises this cycle. And I'm just wondering what's your experience with that as a department head? Is that something that you do? How do you, can you talk a little bit about your process?
Yeah, so I would love to talk about that process. I've not actually had a chance to do that. Now, from a merit standpoint, yeah, we've been under so the state budget here has been generous in across the board raises. We do not have a faculty association or a union. And so there's no like, and I know you all went on strike. You were work to rule for a while, where we still did the podcast. But yeah. But we have not had a chance to do merit raises since I've been in my position. I did, but I can talk to you about market raises, because I did do some market adjustment. We did get a pool of money for that, which so it's different, right? Like, because that had some rules of I needed to look at what the market was for particular positions as well as rank within those positions, and I was able to distribute some funds to some folks who were extremely, extremely appreciative, but also they're in a spot where when I looked at my spreadsheet of all the people in my department, it was clear that there was a problem that I needed to fix, right? Like, there was, without getting into too much of the details, there was some market issues that individuals had not been compensated to what the market, even the market average or the market floor was. And I don't, the floor is not really a floor if someone's actually below it, but we had a number of faculty, well, number of people, wasn't just faculty, that were below a floor. So I raised them above the floor, and towards the the average, but it was, yeah, I haven't had a chance to go through a process where merit was factored in. So I don't know. Tell me about your process. Okay. Yeah.
And all of this data was like the floor was provided to you, level that the current, the faculty were out of step, or the faculty and staff were out of step with that, was also provided to you. And then it was up to you to decide whether to fix it or not.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. Like you. Yep. Exactly.
So, and how much, and you had control over how much, like you could, if you wanted to, you could give like all the money to your friends, right?
Yep. I could. Yeah. And,
but of course, as a department head, you wouldn't do that. You would try to do what was fair and equitable for the good of the whole department.
Right. Because as a department head, I have no friends. You're my friend. I'd have to give it to you.
University. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you're exactly right. And so I was given a chunk of money that I could put all on one person, or I could put, you know, distribute across a number of, I could give everybody something. And I chose to do neither of those things. It was kind of in the middle. It was I would say a relatively, so I've got a department that's that's big and that has some folks who have state funds on them, and some folks that have like grant funds, but I was able to top up some folks that were on grant funds because they were well under market. So I think, I can't remember the exact number of people, but let's just say I have about 100 people on my spreadsheet, and I was able to give about I think it was like 10 maybe of the 100. I was able to fix some stuff because of market.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Without like that, I feel like that's,
yeah,
like I've given you enough detail without giving too much, right? Like,
we don't want to get in trouble with, with the law for revealing secrets. So
exactly.
And I will try to be similarly cagey. So historically our committee has not, so at my level, I have to basically say this person is getting a 1% raise or a 5% raise or a $1,000 raise or whatever, right? Like I have to actually put numbers in, I think. Yep. But our peer evaluation committee could also have put in numbers, but historically in our department, they have not done that. Mm-hmm. What they have done instead is ranked the candidates who applied. Right. And so what I had to do was to take those rankings and then somehow turn them into a dollar compensation. Right. While at the same time realizing that there's a limited pool of money available to the department. Right. Now, it only really matters at the school level. Right. So if the dean wanted to show favor to one department and not to the other, the dean could, you know, put her finger on the scale for this department and not for this department, right?
Right.
I could also do that as chair. I can look at the recommendations from the committee and I can say I agree or I disagree, put my finger on the scale for people that I think the committee, either way, the people that the committee overvalued in my opinion or undervalued in my opinion. And so that's what I've done. That's what I'm in the process of doing. So trying to realize that, okay, yes, the committee is doing, like, here's the thing. On the form, there's four checkboxes, right? The merit salary increase shall be this percent, which corresponds to this number of dollars based on their current salary. And here are the checkboxes: teaching, scholarship, service, and special. And so obviously for faculty that don't do scholarly work, they don't check that box, but the special box is where I can say, hey, look, this person, you know, needs more compensation. Kind of, it's a little bit, I mean, and it could be it could be for the reasons you've talked about, which is that historically this person has been undercompensated and we're trying to fix that, right? But not necessarily, right? It could be because the, you know, service above and beyond, blah, 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 right?
Yeah, it's interesting. I also felt like I know I think I know what you're feeling. Like I felt like when I was able to do it, it was really cool, right? Like here's something, and especially in a couple of cases, it was for people that had never really asked for it, right? Like at least in my, as long as I'd been in this role. right? Yeah. Which was really like some of it was like a bit of a surprise for them. And they're like, whoa, wait a second. Okay. That's really cool. Thank you for that. And
yeah,
really enjoyed that. Like, I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, so that's pretty awesome. What else is going on in department head chair world for you? Anything? I've got a couple of things.
We're in the process of trying to bring 9 candidates for 3 positions to the campus. And that's insane.
Yeah.
And the thing that I was working on this morning is I was talking with the dean's administrative assistant to try to make sure. And again, it's like herding cats, right? Like, I'm trying to let each of the 3 committee chairs do their job, right? But at the same time, I've got to deliver for the dean. I made what I think is a very beautiful spreadsheet with color coding and different searches and then cross-referencing that with the dean's availability, and then trying to get the problem is, you know, getting time on the dean's calendar is tough. Fortunately, her admin did very kindly, without even prompting from me, say, hey, look, I know you're going to need a lot of Laura's time. Here's her availability over the next month or 6 weeks. And thank you very much for that, Joyce. And also, there are some times when we were planning on bringing candidates when the dean is not available. So I had a nice chat with Joyce, the dean's assistant, about how we can fix that. And she's just, I mean, her, I can't even imagine. She basically, her whole day, it sounds like, is just wrangling the dean's calendar, right? Like, oh, look, the president has put a meeting on her calendar.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, I guess she should probably go to that.
Yeah,
Now we have to disappoint whoever it was that was originally in that slot. And so amazing work. And she was very helpful for me and very responsive. And so I think we're getting there. We're not quite there yet. And of course, all of this, we haven't even started. We have, in some of the cases, told the candidates we want them to come to campus, but now it's a matter of, can you come on these dates, right? And trying to wrangle all that. And we haven't even gotten to the level of granularity of, this is what you're going to do while you're here, except for, yes, in this half hour window, you're going to meet with the dean, right? So yeah, just making all that happen is a challenge. It's a challenge that I enjoy. Like, I enjoy solving problems like this, probably above my pay grade. But on the other hand, if I want it to be done the way that I want it to be done, it kind of needs, I mean, I delegate a lot to my departmental administrator, but sometimes she understands a lot, but she doesn't always, because she's not an academic, she doesn't always grasp, well, yeah, that's just not going to work to do it like that. I try to not be a micromanager, but there are certain things that I feel strongly about, right? Just as an example, unrelated to this search, I'm bringing a faculty member from another department to give a seminar. And we had to, because of the search, we had to rearrange what that person was going to do. They were going to lead a workshop and they were going to give a seminar. I had to have a conversation with them earlier in the week, say, hey, I'm really sorry, this workshop thing is not going to work. We could still do the workshop, but none of my faculty will be there because we're in the middle of this search stuff. So I would like you to give a seminar. And of course, that meant changing his travel. And the admin said, hey, it's going to cost more money. We're going to lose, because it was a non-refundable ticket, we're going to lose this money, and the credit's going to go back to them. You know, here's what I propose. I'm like, no, I screwed up this guy's calendar with my search. We're going to eat the loss. We're going to give him that credit. We're going to get him on the flight that he wants, because he wants a direct flight. And look, this is, because here, this guy is a colleague, right?
I mean, he's
not in my field, but he is a colleague. He's an ally. He's someone that I respect, that I want to treat him with the respect that I would be treated. And yes, it's unfortunate that we're going to give him $250 But we're gonna get that money back because he's gonna come back next semester and actually give the workshop. But right. It was just no, we can't like jerk people around, right? Like we need to treat people with respect in the way that we would want to be treated. And I hate dealing with bureaucracy and travel restrictions. So if I have the power to wipe away that complexity or that pettiness and that BS, I'm going to do it because how I want to run my department, right? I'm a department where I want to run a department where we treat people, we value people and we value their time. And if it costs us a little bit of extra money to do that, I'm not a department that's going to pinch pennies, right? I would rather spend on fewer things and do those things well rather than try to pinch pennies everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been talking for a while.
No, I'm with you. Like, that's such an it's an interesting spot to be in because I think that, you got a department with a number of faculty members who, you know, they're not really interested in the day-to-day aspects of the budget, but also they want to make sure that the funds are being used effectively and efficiently, right?
Sure.
Like that, but you also there's trade-offs all the time. Like your example, I had a request today from a faculty member who did a project with a student who didn't have funding specifically for that student and doesn't have flexible money to put on publication charges for a publication with the student. Right. And so, you know, kind of comes to the department and is like, hey, here's my situation. Do we have any funds that we could apply to help fix this? Because, you know, I want to get the student's work published. This is the right place for it. All that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, if I look around the department, there are individuals who are also doing a lot of publishing that are paying for their charges on mm-hmm. grants, but this right. individual just doesn't have it. So it's like, well, should I give everybody publication, you know, charge, you know, page fee charges? No, but this is a special situation. And I think, but if someone was just looking at the transaction of it, I could see how someone would say, well, this is inequitable, right? Like everybody should, right. you're giving someone something that not everybody's getting access to. And it's like, yeah, but here's why, right? Like, mm-hmm. let me, so anyway, that's so much part of the job, right? It's that, and you don't want to like nickel and dime someone. And you also don't want to say to someone, no, you can't do it because it's not like, it's not a lot of money in the whole grand scheme of things. Yeah. Right. Oh, yes. I'm right with you. Like that is a big part of the job. And sometimes it's a, I don't know, like split second decision, right? A request comes in. I don't need to spend money, like time thinking about this. I'm like, yeah, we're going to do this. And other times, and it could be for the same amount, there's a bunch of like weighing, okay, what, you know, is this the right thing to do? And it's that part about this job I never really thought about. Like, right. It's really, really interesting to be in the midst of it. So anyway, Oh, well, do you think on the department head chair safety talk feed that the guys who host that show talk about food safety? Wait, here, I'm going to hit my bell.
And it probably really irritates the listeners.
Yeah, whatever. Could you hear my bell this time? Did you hear anything?
No.
Oh,
no.
Wow. Wait,
let me try my bell since we had a surprise bell work the other day.
Nope.
Could you hear that?
Nope, nothing. I wonder if it's because, you know what I wonder what it is? This is my Zoom meeting.
Oh.
And yesterday was your Zoom meeting. That
could be.
Yeah, but isn't that wild? Like there's something three pages deep in the settings that allows it. Who knows?
Yeah. Weird.
Huh. Weird. Okay, so I got some follow-up.
Okay.
That's cool. old follow-up that I want to do. I haven't even looked in the thing. And I just have a reminder to you. I've got a heart out.
At one.
So it's a short episode today, but that's okay. They don't all have to be long. Good content is good content regardless.
Right.
So, the follow-up I wanted to do with you is I got an email. So I don't know if you remember last year, we talked about an outbreak, Okay. And where's the best place for me to put, remind me again? Can I, does it matter? You, I want to be consistent. Where do you want, tell me where
you
want.
Oh, you can, you, that's fine. Texting is fine.
Okay.
Or messages is fine. It's either working one, today.
It's working today. Okay. I just, I don't want to, I'm not, I don't want to put them into two places for you.
No, no, just one place is fine. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to protect, let's go here. I don't know if you remember, I'm sure you do, that we talked about an outbreak that was linked to a milkshake machine at a business called Frugal's in the Pacific Northwest. Do you remember that at all?
Vaguely.
Okay. So I'm going to send you something that I didn't read at the time. But I want to give a shout out to the good folks of the failing New York Times, who I think have not failed, as we talked about in the last episode. But there's another great, like, they do a good job in covering stuff sometimes. So this outbreak happened last August, August 2023. I was alerted to it from a couple of news articles, and I think probably Food Safety News. And I'm going to send you a bunch of links here that we'll mm-hmm. include here. There was a number of illnesses. Well, I shouldn't say a number. I mean, there was. It's all a number. I feel like I've been listening to Rec Diffs in the most recent episode. They're talking about types of numbers and plural. I don't know. I spent a bunch of time listening to them running the other day. And so anyway, there is a number. It's six hospitalizations, but catastrophically, tragically, three people died. And it was Listeria that was found in milkshakes, and it was sold at one specific Frugal's, but there's a whole bunch of Frugal's out there. And it was linked to a milkshake machine. And it's a milkshake machine that is this one, I think, I don't know if it's in the article, but I know because we heard about it from someone else, is made by this company named Taylor. And it's just particularly hard to clean and sanitize. And it's not Taylor's fault. Well, I don't know whose fault it is, but like they've gone through the process, and they have it's a difficult, you know, to take it apart. There's a whole bunch of O-rings. There's like five different brushes. There's a manual that's like 50 pages long. And it's just a difficult piece of equipment. And so what has, you know, the link that I sent you was, one of them was to the Department of Health in Washington State. And it says investigators found Listeria in the ice cream machines, which were not cleaned correctly. Okay. That's the piece of information that I wanted to kind of share. That's like established in this like public facing document. Anyway, I got an email from a company that makes milk, makes things, not milkshakes, but they sell milkshakes. They make, they would be like a place that you might, let's just say they're a place that you might see on the side of the road if you're driving somewhere, and maybe you get other things that help propel your car there. And then also you might go get some food. And so I'll read this. Yeah, yeah, I'll read so this.
Things that propel your car, like gasoline perhaps electricity if you have a Tesla.
Could be.
Yep. But not confirmed. Could be. Who knows? Who knows? You might have like a Fred Flintstone style car.
I don't know.
I don't know what you buy for a Flintstone style car. Maybe shoes? Well, I don't know.
Well, it could be that you've got a horse and carriage. It's a hay store, and maybe they have jerky there as well. But also, they also sell milkshakes. So anyway,
you're not going to buy that jerky though, because you don't buy jerky. As we've established on a show that hasn't published yet.
Yep, never purchased jerky. So anyway, I got a message from someone who says, "Hey, I work for this company. There is a person who also works for this company who saw you give a talk somewhere." And you talked about this outbreak in the Pacific Northwest and milkshake machines. And it said, I wanted to reach out to you on that note to see if you have any other information on this that you might have come across that you could point us towards. And they, you know, this person said, hey, we were able to find this following link. And their link was to a different, actually, I'll put this in show notes, a different Department of Health Washington article that kind of gives it's the outbreak kind of report, but not the investigation. So I'll give you this one that we can include as well in show notes. And they say, so as some context, we're in the process of reviewing our soft serve ice cream testing protocols. And then they go into like one, a state sort of changed their rules. We want to know if we should be doing more in this area. I've seen materials from other states, but any insight that you can give about this outbreak would be really, really appreciated. So I went, you know, went back and kind of dug up some stuff, answered the question, and said, yeah, the testing, doing sampling of milkshake machines, probably not a bad idea. And here's why, right? Like from this particular outbreak, we learned that it was really difficult to clean and sanitize this particular, machine. And so I've already kind of shared what, you know, most of that, but it's like, it says things like you need to disassemble the equipment, requires a lot of mechanical expertise. The manual says that you have to leave parts to air dry overnight. It's a really complex process. So anyway, The best part, Don, is that I got a message back from this person that said, oh, hey, this is really detailed and very helpful. We luckily do not have this machine. Because it sounds like a logistical nightmare. And said, you know, I'll share this with our team. We'll investigate what it's like with the machine that we currently use, but we really, really, really help. But so I wanted to tell you about this because it actually builds on a message that I sent you yesterday about work that you've done and that you talked about a little bit, but we won't go into details, but with supporting food safety with Rutgers cafeterias and dining services or whatever the official group is. And, I asked you about that because I have, I've worked with our dining, it's called NC State Dining, and they're a phenomenal group, really good partners. They've allowed us into their kitchen facilities to do some work on digital food safety management. And as a result of that work, like that partnership, really the partnership has been, hey, we'd love to get into your facility to understand what a working kitchen looks like. We want to apply some stuff and do like, you know, see if we can train your employees on some things because we're trying to test some stuff out. And then at the end of it, we're going to give you like some, you know, the results, and let's talk about, you know, things that we found, but it's not an evaluation of what they're doing. It's really about how people interact with like sensors and software and long-term trends. But that work led to a larger conversation of like, well, how could you, like, basically they asked us, how could you help us maybe work on our food safety culture? And so I gave a talk yesterday to our NC State dining group, I don't know exactly, like their leadership group. So like their, you know, top folks within the university system, and then the managers that and chefs that run our catering and our cafeterias. And it was a really cool like experience. I got to spend an hour with this group talking about food safety culture. And I utilized this Frugal's milkshake outbreak as an example. And so the example that I gave was the really good companies that are mature in food safety culture are actively reading and thinking about outbreaks that are happening, not to them, but happening to others, to see whether they should improve their processes or their equipment. And no sooner did I have that talk that I got this message from this company that so serves either hay or beef jerky or gas. And I was like, man, that's like really cool, because like this company who reached out did exactly the thing that I told, you know, NC State Dining was like, this is a good thing to do, is like pay attention, right? Like pay attention to what's out there, what's happening at other cafeterias. Do you know in your community of practice, right? Like a nice buzz term, but in your peers, what are they doing? And so anyway, thanks for sharing a little bit about what you're doing. I can start engaging in a conversation with our folks. But I just thought it was like, I don't know, sometimes what's the right term, Don? Am I gonna use this right? Is it kismet? Is that the right term?
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Like just I would two like separate things came together. Kismet is a hypothetical force or personified power that determines the course of future events, fate or destiny. I don't know. Maybe that's not
the right term. Coincidence would be another term, right?
Yeah. But it was like really cool. Like, oh, these things. So now I'm like, I'm actually going to like share that story with my dining friends and be like, hey, I talked about this thing and here's a company that actually is doing the thing that I talked about that I would love to help you do. So anyway, just wanted to share that as like things that I'm seeing in the world of food safety.
Cool.
Okay. I got some other stuff to talk about.
Before we leave this, would you say that milkshake mixers, like that's your thing now? are you going to San Bernardino? Sorry. Every time milkshake mixers, I think of the amazing Mark Knopfler song Boom Like That, which is about McDonald's. Is your name Croc? That's Croc with a K. Like crocodile, but not spelled that way.
Right. Yes, that's me. That's me.
Okay, good. Folks line up all down the street. Folks line up all down the street. Sorry. I it's just such a good song. I have to listen to it now, but anyway.
You will include it in show notes, and
I will absolutely. I'm going to include the lyrics in show notes, and maybe we'll find a good video to link to as well.
Awesome. Hey Don, are you ready for the part of the show where I tell you you're doing something wrong?
Sure.
The headline is: you're probably cleaning your reusable water bottle wrong.
Oh, am I?
Yeah. Huh.
Well,
yep.
The joke's on you. I don't clean my reusable water bottle.
Uh-huh.
So I can't be doing it wrong.
All right. Let's take a look at this. Let's see if I can get you the actual article because, you know, the bit is, you know where it comes from, right? You want to say it or do you want me to say it?
You can say it.
Apple News sent me this. this, I think. Let's see. Water bottles. Yep. Okay. So there's a totally different headline of this same article, but of course the one that I wanted, that's a different, I don't know if I can even find this. It's in the BBC Science Focus magazine. Okay. That's what I want to tell you about. But let me see if I can actually find pocket mags. I don't know. Except all will this do it? Oh, you could read the rest of this for $1.48. I don't think that's the right one. Here's one on. Oh, here we go. Here we go. I think we might have found it. It's taking me to Twitter. Oh, okay. Which is gonna? Oh, the calls are coming from inside the house. It's taking me to back to Apple News. All right, I'm just gonna. We'll send. I don't know if I can find this original one for you. Okay. Let me just read about it.
I have a link that I will share with you from health.com that quotes a certain famous food safety podcaster.
Oh, well, this one does not. This one is written by Dr. Primrose Freestone, which come on, it sounds like I love
that's a made up name if ever I've heard one.
It seems like something that ChatGPT would have made up, but it turns out that it, at least based on the internet, it is a real person. So let me see if I can find. I found it. I found a link to it. But let me see. Cool. Hopefully you don't have to. That actually worked. I Googled the author. All right, here it's coming. There we go. Science Focus. Click that one.
Okie doke.
All right. A microbiologist explains which nasties may be lurking inside your water bottle. Make sure it doesn't make you ill. And again, this has the third different headline. So you're cleaning your water bottle all wrong, right? Or you're not washing your water bottle enough. This one is your reusable water bottle is likely much dirtier than you think. Here's how to clean it properly. Okay. So do you want to guess at what might be lurking or living in your water bottle, which is a subheading before looking at it?
I'm guessing microorganisms.
Yeah. Yep. Water, even from the kitchen tap, is not usually sterile. That's true.
That's true.
Some
That's true.
of
Should I wait? Are you saying I should I not be drinking the water from my tap, Ben? Does it
it's
contain germs?
Don
I don't
it
want to have any germs in anything that I eat or drink, Ben.
would yep. And so in here, Don, the growth of bacteria naturally occurs in all non-carbonated waters only a few days after a bottle is filled. There's a link. There's a link to this. Okay, it's a oh, this is fantastic. I will give you the URL here. It is highlighted in my screen exactly what they're
Yep.
referencing here, which
Yep.
is that in 1960,
Yeah.
Budeau,
Boudetex and Baudier. Boudetot. Boudetot and
Budeau and
Boudier.
Boudier were the first to show that with 1 week after bottling and storage at ambient temperatures, the natural microbial flora of the water starts to multiply and give rise to an increase of CFUs up to 10 to the 4 to 10 to the 5 per mil. Let's follow the path of this one.
Oh,
Oh, it's
well,
French.
except it's in French.
Yep, it's
So.
from yep. So anyway, there you go. So yep, that's an oh, that's a let's just say that's a dated reference.
Yeah, but not incorrect. I mean,
It's not incorrect.
I did some work with my now former PhD student for his master's degree, Matt Igo, looking at because we were interested in this issue because microbiologists often will put microorganisms on to various surfaces, biotic and abiotic foods and non-foods, in diluents. And Matt did some work that discovered or rediscovered the fact that they would grow under certain circumstances, even when we use water. So it's not surprising, maybe, that it grows in phosphobuffered saline or Peptone broth, but bacteria will also grow in distilled water. Not to the extent that this article indicates, but it really, yeah, and there's a bunch of different reasons for it. It's actually a really interesting area of research that I would like to do more with, and we are doing a little bit more with in some of the ongoing research in my lab.
And so like I like your insight there, and I know it's something you've shared before, which is it's important, right? Like it and you know I think the dogma is that the pathogens that we're worried about, not just bacteria, but the pathogens that we're worried about in the world of foodborne illness need to have water, right? So if you put it in water, it's got water, but it needs to also have nutrients to grow. And so there may be some micronutrients that are existing just from the environment that give enough for things to grow. But I don't know. These are like I know we've talked about this. I think we've even done a Risky or Not number of Risky or Not episodes, but this one just like popped up again as like it's coming from a science article, and it's like things can what might be living there. Yep, bacteria, microbes found inside a typical water bottle, not surprisingly, include skin and oral microbes such as Staphylococcus and Streptococcus. I guess, right? That's not a surprise. And then they go in to talk about the water bottles, microbes probably not coming from the water itself, but mostly from the person drinking it. And I'm not going to go through all the details of this, but here's what it seems like I'm doing wrong, because the BBC says to avoid getting ill from your water bottle, you should ideally clean it with detergent after each use, or at least several times a week. It's also important to clean any lids or attachments, such as straws. These all can also harbor microbes. And I guess I wanted to revisit this with you because I maybe famously, maybe not famously, but you and I have talked about this in other times. I don't do that. I keep my soap like I and. I know this isn't about SodaStream, but I've got both a SodaStream set of water bottles, and then I will tap a little Foley here. Can you hear that? That is a did you hear my tap in there, Don? Did it or
No, one
was
more
I
time.
nothing?
Not nothing. I and to help hear better, Ben, I was taking my headphones that are over my ears, and I was holding one of my ears closer to the microphone, which wouldn't do anything to help me hear better, because that's not where the sound is coming from. So, but I just want to let you know that that didn't help.
Okay. Well, so I've got a micro light 17 fluid ounces, 500 milliliter fluoric bottle fluoric ounces. I carry that in my knapsack, on a daily basis. Cause sometimes I show up in a building and I need some water. Sure. I rinse it out, on no particular schedule. I let it air dry. I rinse out my soda streams and underwater on no particular schedule. Sometimes when I feel like the water is getting a little stagnant within it, I'm not worried about the risk from my water bottles. So nope. I don't think I'm doing it wrong. I'm just going to say, I'm going to argue.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm doing anything riskier than if I had used detergent. And the thing that I don't know if I've told you this, I rinse these because I have trouble with tasting detergent in my water bottles the time. I don't want that. I want nothing. I want only water to be the thing that goes into my water bottles at all times.
Yep. Yeah. And in fact, I think stuff that comes out of our automatic dishwasher in our house sometimes will, I don't know if it tastes soapy, but if you fill it up with just from the tap, it has a little soap residue on it. And I will, it's my, just my habit now, every time I get a glass from the cabinet is I will rinse that out because I don't like the idea of drinking soap. And then, and with respect to SodaStream, I will do the same, that they do make ones that are dishwasher safe now, but I don't put them in the dishwasher.
Me either.
I will occasionally examine the lid and the screw cap part of the bottle. I guess what do we call that from Better Process Control School? The finish of the bottle. And I will, if it looks a little cruddy, I will get in there with a specially designated dishwashing toothbrush, a toothbrush that we don't use for brushing our teeth anymore. And I'll put maybe a little bit of soap on that and then just get in there and scrub away what is probably some mold accumulation or slime accumulation, a little bit of like pink slime, not the actual meat pink slime, but a little, colored nonsense that I'll just scrape in. But I guess nothing against our colleague Dr. Primrose Freestone, but I would also encourage, we will link to the health article that I was quoted in, because I think I tried to give some little bit more sensible advice. You could wash your reusable water bottle on a regular basis, but like, don't obsess over it, right? It could be every day, it could be every few days. Here's the thing. If you're using your water bottle to drink something that's not water, that would be a good time to wash it, because then there's going to be, maybe if you use it for milk or fruit juice or something, there's going to be some residual there. I don't think there's a lot of people out there getting sick from drinking from germy water bottles. There is a risk associated with water bottles though, Ben, which I experienced firsthand. I, like you, have a SodaStream. I, like you, have a water bottle that is a reusable water bottle that actually lives at work, because we have some really nice dispensers all around campus of water bottle filling dispensers, the drinking fountain, mostly designed for refilling water bottles, which is great. I mean, and the water tastes good and never have to, worry about it. And I try to use that on a regular basis. But one day before that, I designated this very classy IAFP branded metal water bottle. I had it at home and I'm like, hey, I want some fizzy water and I'm going to go to work. So I'm going to fill this water bottle with fizzy water. And I did and put it in my backpack and proceeded to go to a meeting. I got there early. I was chatting with a fellow department chair, also named Don. And I proceeded to open my water bottle, and it was like I was opening a champagne cork, and there was a pop. And fortunately, I had it pointed at the ceiling and not at Dr. Kobayashi.
Yeah.
Because that would have been a lousy way to develop a friendship with a fellow department chair. And it went up in the air, and it hit the ceiling, and it bounced over to the floor, And Don was, I think, as they say, nonplussed. He just sort of sat there and smiled and said, So he was very calm, despite the fact that I almost maimed him with a water bottle cap. So needless to say, Ben, I do not fill that with fizzy water anymore.
Yeah,
and I guess the reason must have been it's a really tightly sealing water bottle and it jostled around in my backpack.
Yep.
I've never had that happen with a SodaStream bottle. But I will be very careful now if I ever were to put fizzy water in my reusable IAFP branded water bottle.
Well, I cannot confirm this. I also take my SodaStream bottles all over. I use these ones. I think it's called like My Only Bottle. Do you know what that one?
Mm-mm.
Only SodaStream. Yeah, SodaStream My Only. Here it is. I'll send it to you on Amazon if you want to buy one. So here's this is my favorite. Sorry. I'm getting lots of people sending me texts. I almost sent it. Someone else almost got that. Brian Wilson, my friend, almost received that one. So
Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys?
Well, so Brian Wilson, yeah, spelled differently, but he is a big fan of the Bare Naked Ladies. And constantly I'm telling him that I'm lying in bed, just like
lying in bed with Brian Wilson. Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
Yep. Okay, so this is the SodaStream that I have, or bottle that I have, that I use on. I have three of them. I take them all over the place. I think that there is like a safety in the lid because you can't over tighten it. Like it has a little click.
Okay, nice.
So I think if it really got shook up, it would have like, it's not like a valve, but I think that there's something going on in the lid that won't allow, will allow for the gas to escape before it. You know, it's a
it's a fancy looking lid on there.
Yeah, well, that's why. Yeah. So I wanted a fancy lid that has like it's got like a rubber stopper in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's I just love it. And it's metal. Mm. Yeah. So it's much.
it's metal.
It's metal. Well, and I like.
You mean made of metal? It might also be metal.
It's metal, in the sense, man.
That something as cool as metal.
Rock
right?
on. Yeah. So those are the ones that I use at home, and in my daily drive. I'm constantly taking these water bottles all over the place. Anyway, I don't think you and I are doing it wrong. But that's okay. Like this is the thing. Science takes all kinds of opinions, and Dr. Primrose, Freestone. It's good that people are writing about it, so it gives us something to talk about.
Right.
Well, although we would find lots of things to talk about.
And again, I props to Jani Hall, who is the reporter who interviewed me for Health, health.com. Like she did a really nice job, and really like we went back and forth with questions and then follow-up questions, and it was good. I mean, I really felt like she wanted to do a good job. She didn't want to just alarm people, you know, and it was probably all of this was capitalizing on this TikTok video that kind of went viral, right? TikTok video from 100,000 likes, which happened around the same time. So this health.com article came out January 18th. The one from, let's see, from our good friend and colleague came out January 29th. Obviously there was something. Yeah, people were thinking about this for some reason, right?
Yep. And it's probably like as TikTok videos lead to people getting excited about stuff and asking questions. I want to change gear a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
In the world of food safety, we talk about how like making people sick is not good for business, right? Like that's a common thing, right? Like our friends at Chipotle experienced this, you know, what, seven out, this is like 10 years ago now, but seven outbreaks in like 18 months, definitely have invested a whole bunch more money. I'm a proud consumer of Chipotle food today, and in fact I might even eat it like actually today, because there's a very there's a Chipotle that is I could, well, if I gave you a nugget of things to talk about, Don, I think I could put my headphones down, leave my office, order Chipotle, and be back. And that's not saying
by the time I finish talking.
By the time you finish talking. Yeah. Like it is it, right now, I would say I'm looking out my window. I am 150 yards from a Chipotle as where I currently sit.
Wow.
Yeah. Don't opsec me. Don't what three words me, please. yeah. So anyway, that's I don't, where, how did I get here? Oh yes. That making people sick is bad for business.
Right.
So one interesting trend that I don't know if people are paying attention to other than the folks in the food safety world is that, making people sick is also not good for you if you don't want to go to jail, or pay a $250,000 fine. I point you to a URL that is coming through your text now. Something that dropped yesterday afternoon. I got an alert on this. Former New York cheese producer pleads guilty in connection with raw milk products linked to a listeria outbreak. Johannes Vulto, age 60. This is from the Department of Justice, United States Attorney's Office, Northern District of New York. Johannes Vulto, age 64, a former raw milk cheese manufacturer and Vulto Creamery LLC, the company Vulto founded and owned, each pled guilty today in federal court in Syracuse to one misdemeanor count of causing the introduction of adulterated food into interstate commerce related to the sale and distribution of cheese that was linked to a 2016-2017 outbreak of listeriosis, the disease caused by Listeria monocytogenes. Quote that I want to read to you here from U.S. Attorney Friedman. This investigation and prosecution hold accountable the defendant and his business who, through unsafe practices, caused illness and death to consumers in an entirely preventable tragedy. The law enforcement and regulatory partners involved in this case will continue to work together to bring justice to those in danger, the public, through unsafe and unsanitary products and facilities. This is like, so the charge that Vulto pled guilty to carries a maximum sentence of up to 1 year in prison, a term of supervised release of up to 1 year, and a fine of up to $250,000. The charge that Vulto Creamery pled guilty to carries a maximum sentence of probation and a maximum fine of up to $500,000. People should pay attention to this. I just want to say, this is like, there's no longer is it. And I think I've shared with you this quote that sticks with me from some work I did almost two decades ago, interviewing restaurants about what the consequences are to them of having an outbreak at a restaurant. I remember interviewing an individual who owned and operated a restaurant in Manhattan, Kansas, home of Kansas State University, also known as the Little Apple, who said, "What's the big deal?" And I mean, this is what sticks with me is this quote. So I may be paraphrasing it, but it's like, this is how I remember it. What's the big deal? What do I owe people? Like a couple of rolls of toilet paper.
Right. Right.
And it's like, oh, okay. What's the big deal? How about go to prison for a year and a $250,000 fine for, you know, selling stuff that is adulterated. But again, I'll just go to the practice here. The business who had, through unsafe practices, caused illness and death to consumers in an entirely preventable tragedy. This is a big deal to me. Like this is something that I think people like us know about it. If someone, was subscribing to different, news feeds around food safety, including Food Safety News, which is how I learned about this yesterday on Twitter. I think this is a big deal. I think people need to pay attention to it. I don't want to go to jail. Do you? Prison?
No.
I don't even know the difference between prison and jail, but I don't want to be in either of them.
I think jail is a local thing.
Yeah.
The county jail, and prison is like, like when they send you up the river to a actual prison. Do you remember anything about this outbreak?
No. I don't remember.
Okay.
This one.
I'm just curious, like what he sold, because I mean, I think, you can make raw milk cheeses that are properly aged, that are lower risk, or are essentially negligible risk. I wonder what this was. This caused this Listeria outbreak.
So, I'm going to find it. I found it.
You did. Okay.
Yep. Here we go. It is soft raw milk cheese made by Volto Creamery. Here comes the stuff for you on the CDC webpage, posted May 3rd, 2017. What types of raw milk cheese? Looks like a whole bunch of them. There's some Walton Umber, some Hamden, some Blue Blaze, Andes, Willow Emock,
I don't know what any of those are.
Me either. Never heard of any of these things.
Yeah. But here's the thing. All you have to hear is soft raw milk cheese.
Yep.
So if you're gonna choose to eat a raw milk cheese, get a hard one that's been aged for 60 days or more.
Yep.
Don't get a soft one.
Here you go. Case count 8. So similar to the milkshake thing, right? Small case count. Yeah. Two deaths. All 8 were hospitalized because that's what we would expect for with Listeria monocytogenes.
Yep, the Listeria. Yep.
Investigation of the outbreak. New York Division of Milk Control Dairy Services collected 3 intact wheels of the Ouliwa cheese from Volto Creamery. The outbreak strain was identified in those samples taken from the 3 wheels. Outbreak. So what was really interesting in here, though, I'm going to go back to the Justice Department press release. They said that Volto and Volto Creamery both admitted that between December 2014 and March 2017, and I will note that those are a month before the outbreak, they caused the shipment in interstate commerce of adulterated cheese because, according to the plea, environmental swabs taken at the creamery facility between July 2014 and February 2017 repeatedly tested positive for Listeria species. There's got to be I bet you we could find a in our Googling here. There's got to be a warning letter, right?
Yeah. Well, those swabs. Well, yeah. Those were in-house swabs, right?
Yep.
So their own environmental swabs indicated Listeria species. And I guess the question would be, what did they do about it?
Yeah, right. That's why I wanted to see if I could find a warning letter or a 483 that talks about that. I couldn't find one while I was Googling there.
Yeah, well, and we don't know how often FDA was inspecting this facility. If it was a small operation, it might have been delegated to the state of New York to do the inspections, right? We don't know. Obviously, there was a trial, so there was evidence presented. So I'm sure there's depositions, and we could probably get more information, but probably not like on the internet right now, right? But yeah, this is bad. I would recommend, if you're gonna be a cheese manufacturer and you want to make soft cheeses, make them with pasteurized milk, or if you want to make them with raw milk, and don't make soft cheeses, right? Because it's bad news. Listeria, bad news.
Yep.
Bad news.
Or call our friend Dennis D'Amico, who can help you with this. I think he's your go-to as well in this, right? Like, he's our friend at University of Connecticut, Dennis. If anything came up with raw milk cheese, I'm like, Dennis, help me with this. Tell me about aging. Can we put it on wood? What's up? He's done a bunch of work in this area. So shout out to Dennis.
Indeed.
So anyway, I saw that and I wanted to make sure that we chatted about it.
Clear, this is not a Dennis D'Amico producer with over 45 years of experience in the business of entertainment production. I don't think so. This is Dennis D'Amico from the Department of Animal Science. It's a different picture.
It could be.
It's probably a different guy.
Yeah.
He's very productive, but I doubt he has a side hustle being a producer.
Maybe. I mean, let's just say.
You never know.
I wouldn't put it past him. Dennis is a cool guy. And we've never really had a big conversation about like what kind of music he's into, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was also a music producer. I'm not going to put it past him. I think 40 years, I don't think he's that old. I don't think he's old enough to have been a music producer for 40 years.
No,
I'm just checking into his CV here and I don't see anything about music. Music. Nope. Googled, or I tried to, web page search it. Doesn't say anything about it. But I do see a ton of publications on things like, impact of environmental conditions and milk type on microbial communities of wooden vats and cheeses produced therein. Good stuff.
I do. Since we're creepily stalking Dennis, I do like his website.
Me too.
Again, what classes he teaches, but then he has In the News, which is a whole bunch of news articles that he was quoted in. Yep. And then research, outrage, interests, and then hobbies and non-academic interests include beer and brewing. So
not music producing.
How about that?
Doesn't say
it. Well, not.
Maybe it's a term I learned recently as part of a department head chair talk was I think about conflict of interest, right? But are you familiar with a conflict of commitment? Because it's something that we So I would think that it's a, you know, you got a job here. And we exist in a right to work state, which is a really nice way of saying can't make people join a union. Here we have to also track conflict of commitment. So you're allowed to do things above and beyond your faculty work and do consulting, but it can't conflict with your commitment to the institution. So I would think that maybe if Dennis is doing, this is hilarious, we've gotten this far of this, but if he is a secret music producer, he might not want to list this because of the conflict of commitment.
Which the music producer thing or the beer thing?
No, the beer is good. I think the music producing, because 40 years of music, like music producing, and let's find out. Producer.
Oh, what you're saying is that would present a conflict of what did you say it was? It's not conflict commitment. Of interest. It's commitment, right? Because it's a big commitment to be a music producer.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. With over 40 years of experience in the entertainment business, Dennis owns a very well-rounded resume. I think it's a different Dennis.
I think he's pretty certain it's a different Dennis.
Here we are. Okay.
Do me a favor, just real quickly, send me, since you have the page up and I'd have to go back and find it, just send me a link to the other Dennis who's Dennis D'Amico from UConn.
Yep. Yep. I wonder if it's a relation.
I don't know. Maybe one of the Dennises will hear this.
Yeah.
And let us know.
Yeah, maybe.
Click here to book Dennis D'Amico.
Uh-oh. I think I might have just made a mistake with someone.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So I Yeah, I forgot to tell them that I'm in a different office.
Oh no.
Because I moved.
So somebody's come to you for a 1 o'clock meeting, but they're in the wrong spot.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Yep. Perfect. They're on their way. Perfect. Okay. Oh, that makes me feel like a jerk because I should have let them know.
Oh, it's hard though. It's hard. I've had a problem. Speaking of department head challenges, I've had a problem where, I assumed that a student was in the building, and so I told them to meet me in the building, and they had to really rush and take a bus, and they were late. And I'm like, well, you should have just told me that you were not in the building. And then also just trying to be super clear whether it's a Zoom meeting or whether it's, and again, I've become begrudgingly a fan of invites, meeting invites, calendar invites where I can put specifics like where the meeting is going to be and who's going to be there and what it's going to be about, just because it helps to keep me on the rails, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. And it's, and it's easy to look for in your calendar on your phone, right? Like I don't have to find that. Yeah. I'm I'm a huge fan of exactly that. Oh, I feel like a jerk though. I know. Okay. We can't. I know.
Just give yourself a break. It's okay. You can apologize.
I will. I will apologize extensively. And I need to tell them there it is. The right lot to park at.
Mm.
All right. Hang on 1 second.
Sure. Take your time.
All right. Ferndale lot. Oh. All right. There we go. So, there was something else I was going to tell you about.
Okay.
Yeah, no, let me go. Oh, hey, this is like nominally food safety. And I don't think we want to add it to risky or not. So I want to talk about it here.
Okay.
Let me find, actually there's two things I had on my list. Did you hear about this? Okay. You're going to get a link that I want you to click on it and look at the headline. I want to hear your reaction. This is from the cable news network.
Okay.
It's coming your way right now.
Yep. I see it coming.
Yep.
It's got the little blinky dots. There we go.
Yep.
Delta flight forced back to Amsterdam after maggots fall onto passenger.
Yeah.
Ew.
So, I know. Did you hear about this?
No.
Okay. So don't read it. Where do you think maggots? I won't. Yeah. Where do you think maggots are coming from on a plane? Not the snakes on the plane. It's, yeah.
Well, like snakes, but smaller.
Right.
Now I'm thinking about that very funny movie. All right. So, well, they have to fall onto a passenger. I think the most logical place for them to come out of is the overhead bins or perhaps the air conditioning system. But the question in both of those cases is how did the maggots get into those places?
Yeah. So let me read directly from the article because I think this is phenomenal. So someone, a Philip Schott, a Netherlands native who's now living in Iowa, who is an eyewitness to this, said he saw about a dozen maggots on a woman next to him. He said the flight crew eventually traced the maggots to a passenger's bag, which contained rotten fish wrapped in a newspaper.
Mm.
He told the station, Detroit Fox Station 2, WJBK, that the bag was moved to the back of the plane. It was announced that the plane was going back to Amsterdam. Take those maggots back from which they came. Delta Airlines confirmed that the flight had turned around, but did not address specific questions about the maggots. Delta has no prohibitions on bringing aboard perishable food items, including fish, as long as there are no violation of agricultural restrictions for the destination country, according to its website.
Are maggots and rotten fish a violation?
It sounds like I don't know. I'm not sure.
Why would they turn around?
I guess because of the maggots.
But why? Why, Ben? Again, it's gross. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what's going on with it. But I don't think I'd eat the fish. Why did someone bring the fish? Do you think they forgot it in their bag?
I don't know. That's weird.
It's weird that it would have had so many maggots. Like it seems like there would have been a smell.
It seems like there very much would have been other signs, right?
Yeah, but I did not see anything related to the smell. And in fact, people ask that in the comments, but and here you go from your friend on the internet, Jack Splatt. So no one noticed
Splatt
the smell.
Splatt could eat no maggots.
Yeah. So no one noticed the smell. Not one of the 300 passengers with cell phone cameras took a video of this. It is far more likely that Delta had a dead rat problem and called it a fish to refocus the blame on passengers. The conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Yep. Apparently, from this is a fumble rooski. Apparently, the person who packed the bag thought that bringing rotting fish to the U.S. was an acceptable thing to do. I do feel horrible and extremely icky for that poor woman who had to endure maggots dropping on her.
Here's the thing. Bringing rotten fish into the U.S. is acceptable. The problem is the packaging was not acceptable.
Okay, I'm going to end on this comment because this one's good. Disappointed family member in Detroit, quote, "Did you bring me a rotten, poorly wrapped, larvae-infested fish like I asked for?" Unquote. I'm sorry. Not this trip, kiddo.
You know, I have to say, often we say, don't read the comments. These are some pretty good comments.
Yeah, yeah. This is good. Yeah. Just proves the old adage that, quote, "the airplane rots from the fish down." Oh, so good. Okay, good job, internet, on this one. Okay, and then the last one that I was going to tell you about was something, again, I don't think this is a risky or not thing, but it's something that grabbed my attention because of my, you know, because of Apple News. Okay, yeah, here's the headline. It's from my always favorite source. Let's see if this is yep, there it is. This one may not, I don't know if it surprises you, but it came from Fox News. Also was replicated in the what's that bad New York Times, not the New York Times, the other one, the New York Post.
Yes,
might also find it there if you really want to look. But it is a man dies after consuming too much vitamin D.
Mm.
And so do you, so not to get into, I don't know if this is, if I'm going to break a HIPAA regulation or anything, but do you take vitamins? Do you take vitamin D or anything?
I do take vitamins. I don't remember whether I'm currently taking D or not. I know for a while my GP was doing a vitamin D blood test because it was recommended for a while, but then I think it he doesn't do it anymore because it's not recommended. But yeah, I mean, this guy probably took a lot of vitamin D to get this toxic effect.
Yeah. So you can get vitamin D, you know, fortified in milk or cereal or sunlight, right? Like that's the thing. So this actually really interested me because, okay, so I'll read this. As an 89-year-old individual, David Michener, died last year of hypercalcemia, a buildup of calcium in the body that's caused by excess levels of vitamin D. He was admitted to hospital on May 10th, died 10 days later. Tests revealed that his vitamin D levels were at the maximum recordable level. That is a sentence that's going to stick with me. Like that, what does that mean to you? Maximum recordable level. Like we don't have a way to assess any more. Like you're at the top. So we don't even know, like if it was 100 times the recommended, you know, amount. Maximum recordable level is a lot.
Yeah, it is. And you know, you claim that you could walk to Chipotle.
I could.
And get back if I talk for a while. Well, I just proved that I could walk from my home office to my home bedroom to get my bottle of vitamin D while you were talking. And I didn't even warn you that I was going to do that. So I am currently taking 1,000 IU per day, which is 125% of the daily value. So, and again, our article says healthy people should not be taking more than 4,000 IU. So I'm taking a bit above the recommended level, and I don't think I have hypercalcemia.
I hope not. Yeah.
I wonder what the symptoms of hypercalcemia are.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Well, let's hang on. I've gotten further down here. Often a single large dose, 50,000 to 150,000 IUs, depending on the size of the individual, is well tolerated, but chronic overdose can be much more dangerous. And so it said in the article that this person was taking vitamin D supplements for 9 months, but I wonder if it was at this like,
what level? Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Like, so we don't have that info. so much. Once the vitamin D has been absorbed, the main treatment is to address the high calcium levels. This could include administering an IV or giving medications that lower calcium concentration, or dialysis is the thing. So I don't, I wonder what the symptoms are. Anyway, I saw that because it's like a little bit food safety, right? Like I think, and the reason why I say this is that I think that I know a number of individuals in my non-food safety world who are into like dietary supplements and like this idea of like you can't take too much of this stuff because your body will flush it. It's like no,
it's a fat soluble one, so
yep,
no.
Yep, you can pay. This is not a good one, right? Like don't do that. So, I got a heart out in 2 minutes. I deserve.
Wait, for the person that's coming to your office that got lost.
Yeah.
Went to the wrong office.
That's correct. They're coming to the right spot, and they probably will be here pretty soon.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, so can I just do one bit of information here? Let's see. Dropbox, podcast. Food safety talk. We got a very sweet message from a listener. I don't know how fast I can do this, but I'll try to do this quickly. So, dear Professor Don, I just finished episode 289 where I was featured on After Dark. I was laughing with the fuck it joke, which is not a curse word, Ben. It's a location in Thailand. Phuket. Sorry. Hyacinth bouquet. From Keeping Up Appearances. So anyway, the food safety talk is at episode 300. So I'm 10 episodes behind. And then the person just wants to share that they recently published a paper with their students with the journal JFP, which is Prevalence and Antimicrobial Characteristics of E. coli in Selected Vegetables and Herbs in Bangkok, Thailand. So I just wanted to give a shout out to that listener and say thanks for listening and congratulations on the publication.
Oh, very cool. Awesome. And can we link to that publication in the show notes?
We will. We absolutely will. Oh, and I do. Real super quick. I know we're running
late. We're good.
This is a comment. Here's the thing. We have another podcast where we don't do follow-up or feedback, but sometimes we have to. I think it's important to do. So this is from listener Chris. He says, I wanted to comment on the ice hockey gum incident. First of all, I totally agree. Not risky, assuming it was his gum. Gross, but not risky. With regards to the general microbial safety of the ice surface, though, and because I suspect you guys love nitpicking minutiae, there is an aspect you neglected. Yes, the water is generally potable municipal water, or at least the same water used in bathrooms, etc., of the rink, but it's transferred to a holding tank in the Zamboni. Sidebar, definitely a brand name, but I don't know if anybody else makes ice surfacers. Maybe there's a European or Japanese company that does it, but they have 0% of the North American market, which is probably like 95% of the global ice hockey market. And that's a hell of a sentence here. We're still going. And that holding tank is likely not designed to be clean and sanitized. And even if it was, the rink is not getting in there with a cleaning product and scrubbing it out. Furthermore, Maybe the rinky is a person who does that. Anyway, furthermore, the fabric that spreads the water out is also likely never cleaned beyond just air drying. I would still say in general, the ice gum situation is not risky, but I probably would say it was risky to drink water from the spouts on the back of a Zamboni or to use the fabric to clean off your hands. Love the show. Much love from, of course, Toronto.
Oh, fantastic. Awesome. Hey, We're good. Two things I want to give you one little piece of info. One is absolutely there's another ice resurfacer company out there called Olympia. So they're actually out of Ontario, Elmira, Ontario. I'll send you a link for the show notes on that. Give me one second here. All right, that's coming your way. And I think that was it. So thanks for the feedback. Okay, well, I'll say bye.
Bye.
Bye. Cool. Hey, we got 2 seconds to my folks yeah. just arrived, but let's schedule real quick.
Yep.
Oh, I just had a panic heart attack about were we recording? And we were. Don't worry.
Oh, we were. Yeah.
Yeah. I usually check, but I didn't today because I was like late.
Yeah. I looked. I got the notification when you joined. So
perfect. Okay. So what's the week of the 18th look like for you on, say, like 1 to 3 on the 20th of March?
I am holding that for a potential call with a client.
Okay. I could really do like any time in the afternoon, like late on the 20th.
All right. Well, I tell you what, let's.
Or do you want me to give you another option?
Mm. And sure.
March 22nd, anytime after 10:30 a.m.
That is a Friday.
Yeah.
But let's. Well, and then of course I will all say all of this is caveated because we do have yes. candidates on campus yep. for searches, and so any of this could go to hell quickly. Yep. Let's pencil in 1 o'clock on the 20th.
Okay.
1 to 3 on the oops. Cancel, yep. right? And hold on. Discard. Yeah. So let's pencil in 1 o'clock on the 20th. And then we perfect. Might have to reschedule.
Okay. Done. That's fine. We can, we'll be flexible.
Okay. Thanks.
Awesome. Okay. I'll chat with you later.
All right. Sounds good. Bye. Thanks.
Bye.